noticed on your the sheet that you gave me that there are a couple of anecdotes written down, which sound rather interesting. I wonder if you'd tell me what they're all about.
Well, I guess that most people think that a dean's office is not the locale for humor of any kind, but occasionally something occurs, even in a dean's office, that one looks back on with a grin at remembering just what happened. One summer, when I was still quite young in the dean's office, a mother came in to see me on a hot summer afternoon, pleading the case for her daughter who had been dropped for scholastic reasons from our college, and the girl was with the mother. My office at that time was a fairly small one. It was very warm, and I had a fan going in the office. The mother was wearing a wide-brimmed hat and that she kept on in the office. After some pleading, to which I listened as considerately as I could in spite of the heat of the occasion, the mother was getting more and more excited about the situation, and finally, in desperation, fell on her knees in front of me, whipped off her straw hat, throwing it in the air, and the breeze from the fan just happened to catch the hat, so that it sailed around the room like a boomerang or like a frisbee. I was fascinated by this object floating about the room, and my eyes couldn't help but follow it as I still was trying to look at the mother and listen to her. Well, eventually the hat settled down, and I was somewhat embarrassed, but it was one of the funniest things that happened, because I can still visualize myself looking at the mother, listening to her, but my eyes involuntarily following that hat as it caught the breezes in the office.
Oh, that's funny. How did the issue come out?
As I recall, the girl was not readmitted. I don't think she had a very good case. Then another time in the office, this time it involved a male student who also was in some scholastic difficulty, and I'm not sure just what the situation was, but we were reviewing the entire situation, and he was pleading his case. I was trying to get all the facts so that we could make a decision as to whether or not his request should be granted or not. Finally, after considering the entire situation, I denied the student's request, at which point he stood up, held out his fist, and said, "Dean Rudicelli, I think I'm going to punch you in the nose." Well, I hadn't had any threat like this previously, and I was somewhat taken aback, but I looked at him, and finally I said, "Well, John, I'm not sure what I would do if you hit me in the nose, because it's never happened before. My hunch is that I would probably swing back. And offhand, I think I'm in better condition than you are, because I play tennis regularly, I ski, I'm in good physical condition. I think I'm just as heavy as you are, and I'm sure I'm more muscular than you are. So my hunch is that you'd get the worst of it if we actually came to fisticuffs." Well, I think I convinced him, because he settled down, and eventually the problem was settled. I think that I walked him over to see Dr. Washburn in the psychiatry section of student health, and his emotions were settled over there. So I never was hit in the nose, although I was threatened just that one time. Then too, sometimes funny incidents occur in other parts of the campus, and I guess one of the best known, at least one of the funniest ones that I can remember, occurred one year at commencement when Mark Ingram was dean and couldn't attend the commencement because he had to be out of the country. He asked Professor Farrington Daniels of the chemistry department to take his place at commencement, and at the time I was a marshal, so I was assisting with the ceremony, but I wasn't involved in the actual episode that I'm going to relate. At one stage of the commencement ceremony, the dean of the college asks all of the students in the college who are receiving a degree to stand. And Dr. Farrington said, "Candidates for the degree of Bachelor of Arts will rise," and instead of saying, "remain standing," he said, "and keep rising." Well, the audience went into hysterics. Everybody looked up in the air to see where they were rising to, but Dr. Daniel settled down, as did the students, and they remained standing until all of the other candidates for degrees in letters and science had been asked to stand. And then he presented all the candidates to the chancellor at that stage of the ceremony. But it was the one time when everybody looked up in the air expecting to see the candidates rising like balloons rise sometimes at football games.
Well, it's nice to know that funny things do sometimes happen on solemn occasions. Now, I haven't asked you about your activities since you retired.
Well, it's almost 2 years now. Well, it is 2 years that I retired. I'm finding that I'm busier than I was when I had a full-time job. I suppose part of it is because I can do things now that I couldn't do previously, and I'm doing some of those things, like gardening, for example. I like to garden, and I spend a fair amount of time there, as I did this morning. It was a beautiful day for weeding after that rain last night. I've been active with the Badger Bonsai Society, of which I'm president this year, and that's taking a fair amount of time. In fact, for our meeting tomorrow night, I've been collecting plants and materials up at our lake cottage, because we're going to have a session on wiring tomorrow, and I wanted some branches for the members to actually put the copper wire on, so that if they break the branch, it won't break their hearts as it would if it were the branch of one of their bonsai. So a lot of my time has been spent with the bonsai work.
How long and, have you been doing that?
Well, this is something that I first started when I was in Japan in 1951-52, but I actually didn't have my own bonsai here until about 12 years ago. So I've had some bonsai since 1969. But it's a nice hobby. It's a nice retirement hobby, because it gives one an opportunity to do something every day if he wants to. I mean, there's always something that needs to be pruned, or something that needs to be repotted. Or right now I'm trying to develop an automatic watering system, so that this sprinkler system will go on at a particular time each day and go off at a particular time, so it doesn't keep going. So that it's a good retirement hobby. I still ski in the winter. I play some tennis in summer. We have a family cabin at Hancock, Wisconsin, and we spend a lot of time weekends up there. I've been chopping and splitting wood, because we've had some of our oak trees had to be cut down. And during the winter especially, we have fires in our fireplace, usually from a Friday until Monday morning. So that we need a fair amount of wood for that. So it seems that these things take a lot of time, and Then with one of our sons being in England, I'm taking care of his financial problems here. And I've always left this job to my wife previously because Jeanette had worked for a CPA before we were married. So she's always taken care of the tax reports and the checkbooks. And now I'm having to do that for this son of ours. And that's a new kind of experience. And it takes me a long time to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, one other thing is that I wonder if you talk about the retired faculty activities.
Well, there's, I don't know when the program for retired faculty was developed, but it must have been around 8 to 10 years ago, I believe. A faculty committee has been appointed by the chancellor to do something for retired faculty, and up to a year or two ago, each spring, a reception is held at the Wisconsin Center building for all members of the retired faculty. It's a morning get-together with refreshments, and then a short program and meeting afterwards at which the chancellor and the president give short talks, and it's a general opportunity to visit with people that are retired and that you haven't seen. Last year, for the first time, in addition to the spring meeting, noon meetings were held during the year. There were three such meetings held. They proved to be very popular. I know at one of them, Jack Garner talked about retirement benefits and some of the legislation that was being considered. At another one of the meetings, a member of the economics department discussed retirement problems from a financial and economic standpoint. And these, as I said, proved to be very popular. They were well attended. I'm a member of the committee that's planning this for the coming year, and I know that we're planning to have, again, I think, three sessions during the year, and then the meeting in spring for the general reception.
Will you have these winter sessions the same places that you did last year?
I'm not sure. Last year, one was held at Union South, one was held at the Cuba Club. Forgotten where the third one. I know we missed the third one because we were out of town at the time. But I think that we're planning to hold them in places where transportation is not too big a problem, because that seems to be one of the critical factors in terms of attendance at these meetings. It's always difficult, for example, to find a place to park down near the campus, and that's why a place like the Cuba Club worked out very well. I think we're going to try to do the same thing. We may have one out at the Brittingham home, because Mrs. O'Neill has invited the group to come out there for one session. So we might try to hold something
nice
out there.
Nice. Who else is on the committee this year?
Well, there'll be some new members because some of the members' terms expire, but George Washa has been chairman this past year. Les Holt, former chemistry professor, is on the committee. Nellie McCants. There are two other people, and I can't think of their names right now. But it's a six-member committee that plans this.
And you're on the committee for how long?
For a three-year period. Peter Bunn, the secretary of the faculty, is the man who really does most of the work of the committee. He's the one that is responsible for sending out notices and getting out the proper letters, things like that. And he has a very efficient secretary that helps, too.
That's always useful.
Catherine Beach is going to be the chairman this next year. She's a retired member of the faculty from the the School of Family Resources and Consumer Sciences, what used to be Home Economics.
I have trouble remembering their new name.
Yes. Just like it used to be the Ag School, now it's the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences.
Yes, I've noticed. Well, I've sort of run out of questions. Do you think of any areas that we've neglected that you want to talk about?
Well, one experience that I had, which was interesting and was a responsibility of mine as far as the university is concerned, was the cruise that I took in 1955 as the university representative for the NROTC, the Naval ROTC. Back in those days, students who were in NROTC were required to take a cruise on one of the big battleships. And in 1955, they were on the USS Wisconsin, which was one of the really big battleships with 16-inch guns. The Navy always asked members of the faculty from every school represented on the cruise to spend some time on board ship to see just what was happening. And I was asked to represent the university, which I did for a 6 weeks period that summer. We were flown from here to Norfolk, Virginia, then to Italy, then from Italy up to the USS Wisconsin, which was berthed at the time in Scotland, at Edinburgh. There we boarded and went to Copenhagen, from Copenhagen out into the Atlantic, where they actually had firing practice, then to Guantanamo Bay or Gitmo, and then back to Norfolk, Virginia. One exciting experience was the shooting of these 16-inch guns, because when they go off, even though the USS Wisconsin is just a huge ship, there's real reverberation. In fact, a certain amount of preparation must occur before they can actually do the firing. They have to take the light bulbs, for example, out of all the fixtures. Anything that's glass has to be wrapped up. If you have a shaving lotion, for example, in a glass bottle, you have to wrap it in a towel, because there's enough shock from the shooting of the 16-inch guns that glass will just shatter. Well, this was sometime after we'd been on board ship, so we had gotten to know the officers pretty well, and I wanted to get a picture of one of those 16-inch guns firing. So one of the officers had me stationed in a place where I could get a good view of the end of the cannon, and I was told that I should be sure to hold my camera right up close to my eye, put my finger on the trigger, and I didn't have to worry about pressing it, because the shock, concussion, would be enough so that it would happen automatically. Well, I did what I was told. I got up into the right position, I had the camera up to my eye, I had my finger on the trigger, and when that first shot was fired, my finger reacted automatically, but so did the camera. The camera came back and hit me in the eye, so that for the rest of the trip, I had the best shiner on board ship. The officers, of course, knew this was going to happen, but they thought that this would be a good trick to pull on a college professor. So that was a great experience.
But because you got the picture.
I got the picture, and it's the most exciting picture I've ever taken, I would say, because I've got the ball of the ring of fire actually coming out of the end of the cannon. It's a very spectacular picture. But we learned exactly what the midshipmen were doing on board ship, and it was a great experience. So that's certainly one of the, I would say, most exciting experiences I've had as a member of the faculty.
Certainly sounds.
One thing I haven't said much about are individual students. I've talked about some of the problems we face with students, but I haven't really talked about the student as an individual. Of all the students I've seen during the 43 years in the dean's office, I guess the one that I would rank at the top of the list in terms of my respect and admiration and feeling for him would be Jeff Kunz, K-U-N-Z. He was a member of the Honors Program and was on the Student Honors Committee. He majored in history, was one of the very first students to receive a grant to a financial grant to assist him with the senior honors thesis under the Trewartha grant fund. Jeff, after finishing with his history major, went on to medical school, got his medical degree here, and currently is a doctor in the Chicago area. My hunch is that someday Jeff is going to return to Madison. I'm not sure in what function he'll return, but I've never known of a student who loved the university more than Jeff did. And I'm sure that if ever the opportunity arises, that he'll return here in some function. He wasn't the best academic student. He was a very good academic student, but he wasn't the best student. But in terms of his character, his general personality, he's the man that I would say stands first of all the students I know. Now, there have been some other interesting students. One of my early students, when I was teaching beginning psychology, was John McKinley, who was in my discussion section and also was one of my counselees in the dean's office, because he had the worst stutter of any student I've ever known. John went into service, and when he came back, stopped in to see me, and he had completely overcome the stuttering. I was just flabbergasted because I didn't think he could ever get over it. I asked him what happened, and his explanation was that he was in service and was put into a position where he had to talk, and he had to talk in a hurry. And his life depended on it in some instances, and he just didn't stutter after that. Now, I don't know if this has any value from a therapy standpoint, but at least in his case, he recovered his speech completely, and he finished law school eventually and was the district attorney in one of the nearby towns here. So that John was an interesting one. About the same time, Matt Kust was one of my students in psychology, and Matt was an outstanding student. He was really academically one of the best I knew. He went into service, became an officer on board a destroyer in the Pacific, and in fact was the engineering officer on aboard ship, although he was I think he was an economics or political science major. After service, he went. And while he was in service on this destroyer, he studied Russian and became very proficient in the Russian language, studying by himself. After service, he went to law school, went to Harvard, I think ranked right at the top of his class in law school, and became a well-known lawyer in the field of international law in New York. These are some of the students that have been outstanding. And then, of course, there's Cy Butts. Anyone who has been around Madison, especially just prior to World War II and after World War II would know Cy, because he was a State Street character. He was always in taverns. He was usually in the newspaper for some reason or other. He was a perpetual student because an aunt had, in her will, left enough monies to take care of Cy's expenses while he was a student. And he was a student for a long time. When he came back, he was a very bright person. He was in the experimental college. And when he came back to the university after World War II, he wanted to get into law school. At that time, we couldn't find the records of the experimental college. And there was no evidence that he had ever completed the two-year program. But he said that he had. Doing some checking, we were told that there was a file, a green file of records someplace in the old State Historical Library. One Saturday morning, I put on overalls, I went down into the basement, and at the end of a hall, books were just stacked against the hallway. And I had been told that that was where the file was in back of those books. We found the file there. And the records finally showed that Cy had completed the two-year experimental college program. So on that basis, he was certified for the 60 credits that he had coming to him, because that was the policy for completion of the old experimental college program. Well, Cy was very grateful to me for helping him get those 60 credits. He went on and finished his undergraduate degree, eventually got his law degree, and then practiced law for some years again in a small town upstate. But he was always one of my staunch supporters. At times, assistant and associate deans are maligned and criticized, and whenever that happened, Cy would always come to my defense. So I've always felt very grateful to Cy, although he was one of the real characters of About Town. Well, those are some of the students that I think are most interesting. There are so many of them that it's hard to keep them all straight, but these are the ones that I especially would point out as being some of the best that I can remember.
Well, that's a nice note to end on.
Okay.
This has been a series of interviews with Chester H. Rudicilli, an America's Professor of Psychology and an Emeritus Associate Dean of the College of Letters and Science. He was interviewed by Donna Hartshorn on June 24, 29, and 30th, 1982, and July 7th, 1982. The interviews were held first in his office in South Hall, and then later in his home in Shorewood.